Okay, this is a lecture 11.
I've been asked to highlight the continuity question of the Weder paths again. I'll do that. We had made this little division of the paths at time t and at time t plus delta positive, and the paths could have discontinuities outside that window, could go through smoothly, they could have a discontinuity inside, etc., and many more, of course. And we found that W of t plus delta minus W of t squared, that was equal to delta. That was the calculation. We'd came out of the our characteristic function. But we divided that into two parts, A delta and B delta. Now, I forget which was A and which was B yesterday, last time we met, but well, didn't matter. We'll say that this A part comes from the discontinuous. Is that the right choice?
It says slope.
The other way.
The other way?
Yeah, slopes.
Slope. Okay. This comes from the slopes, and this comes from the discontinuous paths because of the probability of their capture. Now, it's intuitive that as delta gets smaller, we will get fewer of these discontinuous paths, and it's logical that that is proportional to delta itself. That the slopes are proportional to delta is a pure accident of our choice of Weder process. But we cannot tell from the given delta whether how much comes from the slopes and how much comes from the discontinuous paths. So we can raise that question by asking a different moment. We can take this to the fourth power. We know the answer. 3 times delta squared, that's a property of a Gauss normal variable. But in principle, it could have had a certain coefficient depending on the slopes, which if we square all the paths, then their slopes would have been squared, plus a coefficient. They don't have to be the same A and B as before, but we can bring it up that way. It comes from the discontinuous paths because the probability of their capture is still the same. And since we have no B prime, we have no delta term in our answer, then the B prime must be zero. Therefore, the B was zero. So all the paths have no discontinuities. Consequently, they are, contrary to that, they are continuous. All paths are continuous. Of course, modulo almost everywhere with probability one, those kind of things. So all paths are continuous, we can say. Now, there is a grand theorem. I will quote you the theorem since people were asking about names of theorems before. This is theorem by Kolmogorov, who was one of the giants in probability theory. And so in our notation, let x of t be a stochastic variable if there exists alpha positive and beta positive and C positive such that the average of x of t2 minus x of t1 it should be absolute value. Absolute value to power alpha is bounded by C times T2 minus T1 to power 1 plus beta. Then X of T is a continuous process. All the paths are continuous with probability 1. Okay, so what does that look like in our case? We had alpha equals 2 was the first thing we did, but our beta was 0 because we had a strict equality but for the time difference. However, the theorem allows us to go further, so we took alpha equal to 4, and then we found beta equal to 1 because we had a pure delta squared here situation. So we had our alpha and our beta positive, and we had a C, which was like 3 for us, and therefore it's continuous partial. But the intuition of the theorem, in my judgment, is the same. If I raise this to a power, and I get away from the lowest power on this side, because the lowest power would stay if there was a probability of capture of discontinuous paths. It would always be the lowest power, probability of capture. But if I can ever raise that by having a positive beta here, then I don't have any discontinuous paths. So this is a more general theorem. I give it to you in its pristine and picturesque way. I never saw this picture before, actually. But it is a picturesque way for our Wiener process. All right. Let us talk a little more about the support issue. We're going to use our famous Gaiter theorem. We're normal variables. So we're going to discuss it for e to the minus w of t2 minus w of t1 divided by t2 minus t1 to the power I have to guess this power, we'll have to pick it up later. Theta right now. And then I square that. That's my x squared. So x is a normal variable. That's what this is. I multiply it by garbage, but it's still a normal variable. Average. So that's 1 over 1 plus expectation of that normal variable. And that part comes outside, so that's 1 over t2 minus t1 to the 2 theta. Upstairs we have expectation value of that guy, which is then t2 minus t1. That's the regular story on that. Okay? So now we let theta equal 1 half plus or minus epsilon. And I'm going to let the epsilon be positive. Okay. So when I do that, I have, I'll just do it over here, square root 1 over 1 plus, the 1 goes away, and then I have a t2 minus a t1 minus plus 2 epsilon. Minus plus, why don't I write this down as well? Minus plus 2 epsilon. Actually, it's conventional. No, that seems to be right. Okay. Okay, so what happens as T2 goes to T1? If I have the plus sign here, then I have the minus sign here. That minus sign will go to infinity in the denominator, so I get 0. Therefore, W T2 minus WT1 in modulus less than C times T2 minus T1 to that theta, when that theta was 1 half plus epsilon, does not occur. No paths do that. If we have the minus sign, then when we're dealing with this plus, the second one down here, as T2 goes to T1, that goes to 0, so I have a unity over here, Okay, that thing goes to zero, that's just fine. That means that all my paths are of this form, 1/2 minus epsilon, epsilon positive. So this occurs with probability 1. Now what is the C here? C is some random variable which doesn't depend on the T so long as they're within the interval 0 to 1 or something like that. But the point is they have this crazy kind of behavior. So we already found yesterday, or last time, that their time derivative, that's delta W over delta T, is plus or minus infinity. Okay, but in this sense, we can control how they get small with T, and it's certainly not like a power 1, which would say that they had a derivative. That's a question, or just a pen in here?
No, there's a question. Are we ever curious about the functional form of the path?
No. It's very difficult to draw a path which is
continuous and nowhere differentiable. Difficult to give an analytic expression. You can approximate it, and we will approximate it, by giving you its values at, say, uniform time steps along the line, and then approximating by little straight lines in between. But that's a very crude thing. Okay. So we have no derivatives, we have continuity, and we have this kind of bounding on the differences.
Next thing we're going to take up is called stochastic equivalence. Think of a coin which has heads and tails. So that's a two-valued situation. Suppose we have people walking through the door, men, women, 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 man, women, women. That's a two-valued situation, too. Man, woman, 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 man, man. I wouldn't say a coin equals a person, but they are stochastically equivalent. So we say we have a random variable or a stochastic variable, and we say it is equivalent to another stochastic variable, provided, for example, all the moments are the same. Assuming the moments exist, which is okay for us. So let's see if we can find things which are stochastically equivalent to Wiener processes. I'm looking for W prime T's which are equivalent, stochastically equivalent to a Wiener process. Well, the first one is easy and should give you the idea. W of prime of T is simply minus W of T. Take every path and write down its negative. So if the paths, I sometimes like to picture the paths, again, you ask me to draw them or analytic, I can't draw them very well, but you know, approximately. Here is a sample path. This would be the image of that path, that particular path, under this transformation. Okay, that's an easy one. It's transparent that all the moments are the same because the average is zero on both sides, and the second moment is identical because that minus sign goes away. No problem. Okay, that one's easy. Let's go to a little bit harder. This one is given this way. W of T plus T0 minus W of T0. This says, let's take a point, T0 here, subtract off its location, V0, recall that zero, and then follow the path thereafter. And this process looks Brownian, looks like a Wiener process again. So one says, the Brownian motion starts afresh or freshly.
You go to a point at a certain time, look at where it is, and then it will continue like a Brownian motion.
So let's check this. The mean is zero. At t equals zero, this is certainly zero. So what about the second moment? That is w of t1 plus t0 minus w of t0, w of t2 plus t0 minus w of t0, end of average. Okay, so this is fun to work these things out. It's really a joy, and you will enjoy doing this yourself. So, let's take the product of these first two guys. And the rule is, the lesser number wins. Remember, T lesser. So, that's T1 or T2. I'll just call that T lesser plus T0. That's what it is. Now, this product times this one. Well, T0 is the lesser. This product times that, t0 is the lesser, and the last one is t0 is the only one. So I have minus t0 plus a t0. So all the t0s cancel, and I sum up the t lesser, and that's exactly the right answer for ordinary Brownian motion. So that is another equivalent process.
What about the mean at some other time other than t0?
Well, the mean of W prime of T is the mean of W, but these things are always zero. That's the definition. The mean of W at time T was always zero. Okay, let's look at number three. W prime of T is equal to W of cap T minus cap W cap T minus little t, and we'll run this in the interval 0 less than little t less than cap T. So what are we doing here? We're going up to a particular point. Let's call this now cap T. We've taken off the value, so t equals 0. We subtracted that value, and now we're running backwards in time. We're subtracting. So we're following the path backwards. And these paths followed backwards make a Brownian motion if you wanted to review them moving forward. So let's check that. So the only thing to check that's non-trivial is this combination. Four terms again to work out. That's cap T from the first one. When this one sees this one, this is the lesser one by definition, so that will be T minus T1. When this one sees this one, this is the lesser one, so that will be minus cap T minus T2. And when these two see each other, which is the lesser one? Well, that's going to involve the larger of the T's. So that will be a plus t minus t greater. Because if the t is greater, then this argument is smaller. Okay, one of these is t less, the other is t greater. I don't care which. So all that's left is t less. So we get, again, a t less output. Say this is the t greater, therefore that term cancels that. This is the t less, and that's what we our calculation. So again, this is such an equivalent process.
Let's take another one. W prime of t is equal to k times w of t over k squared. And k can be plus or minus. We know what happens to the minus. It was our number one right away, so we might as well just take k positive. No big deal. And look at those. So this is a rescaling of position and a rescaling of the time. Again, the average at t equals 0 is 0 if the average is out, because the average of this is out. And now we have to look at our this guy, t1, t2. That's k squared from this term, w of t1 over k squared, w of t2 over k squared. Well, whichever t is the lesser, that will have a lesser argument. So that's k squared times t lesser divided by k squared, or t lesser. Now, this is the kind of especially interesting one, because it says that on any scale that you look, I look in here with a magnifying glass, and I blow that up to a huge field over here, it looks just the same, like a Wiener process. And I take it again in here and blow it up, it still looks like a Wiener process. At any scale, that makes it a fractal. Mr. Wiener didn't know it was a fractal because the word wasn't invented.
But he certainly knew all about all the properties of fractal. Fractal has this self-similar property under scaling.
Is there an easy way to see that the axiom of a Wiener process are satisfied for...
The axiom of a Wiener process are satisfied for what?
For the physical Brownian motion. How do we...
For physical Brownian motion.
Yeah, like if we... Brownian motion, we think of particles moving in some liquid. There's some way that we can establish that this...
Well, the velocities are not infinite for physical particles. So when we say the Wiener W dot is plus or minus infinity everywhere, that's not true for physics. It is relevant for quantum mechanics, however. It's not true for particles. Little bacteria or whoever are bumping the pollen in the liquid that Mr. Brown saw. But it's an idealization. You saw the hydrogen atom in free space.
I was actually asking in particular about the second moment, that it's the minimum of the time.
Yes.
Is there some way to show that that holds for some of those wiggly paths of Brownian motion?
Well, if you look at a drunken walk, a guy that takes a random step, and then look at it from space where the steps are there, then he will approximate that as close as you like with that minimum. So, I think it's an excellent approximation, to be honest with you. Okay. Now, we haven't talked too much about independence of two Brownian paths yet. Suppose we have W1 and W2, and I want to test whether they are the same or independent of each other, whether they're equivalent or independent, for example. So I can put them up in a two parameter characteristic function. Let's say their means are both zero, then I only have the square to deal with. So that is SW1 of t plus UW2 of t squared. It will have a pure s part, s squared times t, minus 1/2 u squared times t. That's the pure part of this one. And there's a possible cross term here, which would be minus su times w1 of t, w2 of t. If I want to have these processes to be completely independent of each other, that means this characteristic functional has to factorize. This is what independence means, e to the I SW1 of t, e to the I UW2 of t. So I can have no term which is S times U. So this term has got to vanish.
So independence means W1 of T, W2 of T will be zero. Now, this, you can promote this argument to any times as well. So
that's going to happen. So this term would be out. On the other hand, if this thing is not zero, it shows they are partially dependent. They are not independent. They are therefore partially dependent. And let's take an example of that kind of situation. Let's look at our process number 4 over there on the far board one more time and take a look at W prime T1, W T2. That is our transformed process and how it correlates, how it relates to the original process. So this is a single K, W of T1 over K squared, W of T2. Let's first look off in K extremely small, K going towards zero. If K goes to zero, then whatever the T1 and T2 are, this will be the larger parameter. Therefore, this is T2 is the answer. So we have K times T2, and as K goes to zero, that actually goes to zero. So in the limit that K gets small, this is still a Wiener process. K gets small means we've expanded the time. We're looking at it on cosmological times. And that process on cosmological times is independent of its starting process. Let's look at the other limit. K goes toward infinity. Now we're not looking at cosmological times. We're looking at extremely small times here. We're looking at that microscope little part of it. Well, when K goes toward infinity, this will always be the smaller number in here. So I get K times T1 over K squared. And K over K squared means as K goes to infinity, that also goes to zero. So in both limits, K to zero and K to infinity, we get independent processes. We can pick out of a single Wiener process an endless number of independent Wiener processes. You know, I could take a second scale as K goes to zero. I could have another one which went as the cube of K, which got there really faster before. And so all of those would be leading to an equivalent family of Wiener processes. Fun stuff. Alrighty, new little subsection to be called independent increments. Let us look at the following question. SL, sum L equals 1 to capital L, of W of T sub L minus W of T sub L minus 1. Where the time, and I'm taking the average of that, and the times in question, I'm breaking up the time axis into a little interval, so this is T0, T1, T2, T3, T4, T5, and so on. And therefore, if I choose L greater than M, it follows that TL is greater than or equal to TL minus 1. And equal if I chose the note size, equal greater than Tm, which is itself greater than Tn minus 1.
Okay, let's figure out the answer to that correlation function.
Well, all it is upstairs, 1/2 summation SLSM, L and M running from 1 to capital L, expectation value product WTL minus WTL minus 1, WTM minus WTM minus 1. There are terms in this sum where L equals M, and there are terms where L is different from M. Let us choose to examine a term where L is greater than M of the family L not equal to M. So we're looking at this situation. Looking at that, it's a situation exactly like this. So we have a window here, and we have a window over here, or it might even be right next to it, but they're two disjoint windows. Well, here we get to play our fun game again. T sub M, we have this relation on the T's. I take the product of this guy and this guy. Well, TM is the lesser. I take the product of this guy with this guy, and TM is again the lesser. I take this guy, product of this guy with this guy, it's a minus, and TM minus 1 is the lesser. And the product of this one and this one, TM minus 1 is the lesser again. And that all adds up to 2. So these cross terms, when L is not equal to M, will not contribute to this sum. So this answer is equal to e to the minus 1/2 L, summation L equals 1 to half L of SL squared, times this thing squared, which we know what that is TL minus TL minus 1. And this is indeed the product of the separate terms. Well, maybe I should put the product outside. Product of the separate exponentials, indicating independence. So this is a process with so-called independent increments. The variable in this interval, which W minus that the end, the beginning and the end, is independent from this variable, independent from that variable, etc. Okay. Let's talk about joint probability density. We'll build it up slowly. We have delta of x1 minus w of t1 average. That means I'm asking, I want to do the paths start at time zero at position zero, but I'm only selecting out those paths which pass through the point x1 at time t1. This is the probability density for the paths to go through x1 at t1. It's also the probability density condition on the fact that we know they went through position zero at time zero. That was just part of the Wiener process. Clearly, if I integrate this probability density, it's like integrating a delta function. The integral of delta function over x is unity. Average of unity is 1, so I get 1 out of it. Okay.
take second order situation. And I define that to be the product of two delta functions, implying that I want it the other way around, I want two in front. Not important. That the pairs not only went through position x1 at time t1, but they also went through position x2 and t2 a later time. Again, if I integrate over x1, that would disappear, and that becomes the probability for that guy. If I integrate over x2, that becomes this guy. Now, this is the joint probability that we have these two events. But that's equal to, by definition, of the conditional probability that I go through, probability that I go through x2 at time t2, knowing that I went through x1 at time t1, times the probability that I arrived at x1 at time t1 in the first place. Okay, that process continues.
Let me do one more.
P of x3, t3, x2, t2, x1, t1 equal product L equals 1 to 3, delta XL minus W of TL. And that's equal to the probability that I went through, I went through x3 at time t3, given, conditioned on the fact that I know I went through x2, t2, x1, t1. Both of those prior conditions are given, times the probability that those prior conditions actually happened. But we also have another expression for that guy on the previous board. So we can write this as x3, t3, probability to go through x3 at time t3, conditioned on the fact that I did go through here, 1 and 2. This one I can write as the probability that I went through x2, t2, conditioned on the fact that I went x1, t1, times the probability I did x1, t1. Okay. So that goes on. And you can imagine discussing something of the following form. P of XL TL conditioned on the fact that I did all the previous things that I thought I would.
So that you can build it up by those information. Now, special case.
If this equation for star up here equals PXLTL X L minus 1, T L minus 1, if it doesn't depend on anything else but the last place it visited, that's called a Markovian process, then we have a Markovian process.
For example, take a bus,
which is stopping at point A, point B, point C, point D. Now, assuming life is just, doesn't matter when it got, here you are, A, B, C, and D. You're waiting for the bus here. You don't really care so much
that it got here, you will know, conditioned on the time it reached here, 3 minutes past noon, then it will reach you 6 minutes past that noon. So all you need to know is the prior information, 1 point. You don't need to know exactly what times it got over there.
That's a modest example, but that's characteristic. And this is exactly what happens for Wiener process.
Wiener process is Markovian.
Okay. So, yes, sir.
The entire randomness is put inside the initial data.
It was what?
The entire randomness in the distribution.
Inter-randomness?
What? The entire randomness.
Entire randomness is put into?
The initial data.
Where are we saying that? Here?
Yeah.
Well, if you like, this is relevant, the initial distribution of that. You think of classical statistical mechanics. Particles move in deterministic fashion, but they are a random statistical mechanics because you don't know the initial conditions perfectly. So there's a fuzziness in that. That means there's a fuzziness in the future trajectories. That's a case in which the randomness is put in at the beginning. In quantum mechanics, on the other hand, it comes in all the time. Okay, so now let us complete this story about the joint probability densities here.
Let us find this particular joint probability distribution. So that's an average of a product, L equals 1 to cap L, delta of XL minus W of T. Watch carefully what I do. I'm going to put in 0 in this delta function. I'm going to take XL and subtract from it the previous value. And subtract from the W part the previous value that the delta function enforces for it. So all I've done is insert this, but we know that is 0 because that's part of another delta function. However, I've reduced the problem to independent increments. Therefore, all these increments are mutually independent, and so the average of the product is the product of the averages. Transform of one of these. And that answer was e to the minus SL squared over 2 times TL minus TL minus 1. And the Fourier transform of that leads to 1 over square root 2 pi TL minus TL minus 1. These are all positive times. XL minus 1 squared over 2 TL minus TL minus 1. That's an individual one of those, and then I take the product over L equals 1 to L. So with that, I have evaluated this expression. I'm going to come back to that a little bit later. Talk about the limit L to infinity. So we're going to save L to infinity discussion. and pass right now to something probably different for most of you. It's called Ito calculus. I'm interested in evaluating this quantity. So that's my goal.
Why?
Why?
So often.
You'll see. You'll see.
Please be patient.
And we're going to study it by my favorite device of using characteristic functions. Because the expansion of this to second order in S will give me this particular term. So now I'm using S both as a function and as a fixed variable. Shouldn't bother you. We have in the exponent a term which is linear in Wiener process, so it's again a normal variable. We have our standard evaluation. E to the minus 1/2 the guy squared. Well, there are going to be three kinds of terms. S squared over 2 just coming from the pure S term alone, and that will involve delta, because that's the time difference between that I squared that out, that stuff. And delta again, positive. Then there's the term from this guy all alone, and that's 1/2 SUSV,
SUV, huh? SUV.
WUWV, well, we know what that is, actually. So that's minimum UV, DU, UV. Then there's the cross term, which is e to the minus S average integral S of U, W of U, DU times W of T plus delta minus W of T average. No. Yeah, right, okay. Okay, I'd like to take a minute here and make sure we get this time straight. Okay, so this integral runs from 0 to infinity. Oh, yeah, 0 to infinity. And when u is less than t and t plus delta, then these two guys will come together and give me a u, which is the least of that product. And these two guys coming together and give me a u, which is the least of that product. So what do we have? SU, WU, DU, WT plus delta, minus WT, average equals integral from T to T plus delta, and in that interval, U is the least of these, while T is the least of that product. So we have S of U times U minus T, DU, plus the term where our integral goes from T plus delta all the way up to infinity of S of U, times, this one is now larger than both of those, so the smallest one is T plus delta, smallest one here is T, take away the T, that gives me a delta times DU. So that is our evaluation of that particular.
Where did the first part go from 0 to T?
0 to T. 0 to T, we had a W of U times a W of T plus delta minus W of T. But in the product, U is the least of those, so that's a U, and U is the least of those, so that's a minus U. And the essence of this argument is that this thing is order delta. Whatever it is, it's order delta. There's a delta, and this U minus T is bounded by a delta. Okay, we
conclude this lecture. See you on Friday.